Okay, so let's see. So last time we were just sort of finishing up Mishnah Hey. Right, so the thing was, so we were looking in the Rabbeinu Yonah on Be'ishto Amru Kavachamar Be'ishas Chaver, because the Mishnah said that a person shouldn't be Marbe Besicha Im Ha'isha. You know, so we mentioned that marve means not too much, but it doesn't mean that a person should involve himself at all in the instinctual. It just means that it should not be excessive. Okay, because since the instinctual is part of man, so a person has to be involved to some extent in instinctual satisfaction. Okay. But the thing is, we mentioned there, Rabbeinu Yonah mentioned the Chazal that really the that and he quoted Mishlei Mayim Gnuvim Im Taku, that he mentioned that the instinctual is always, the objects of the instincts are always substitute satisfactions. So therefore, we said that a person that engages in the instinctual to a high degree with his wife, let's say, so Rabbeinu Yonah said that behind that really is his neighbor's wife. That really is where that instinct will lead him. Okay? And the question is, why? Why should that be? I mean, where does he get this from? You know? So, but the answer is because it's a principle that the instincts really, the reason why a person never gets full satisfaction out of the instinctual life is because the thing that he thinks he's after, it's really a substitute for something else. And what happens is it always drives him to the next object in line. So that's why if a person gets involved really in the instinctual, he doesn't know where it's going to take him. Okay, yeah.
Because, and you're going to say even the involvement with the other one, with the neighbor's wife, that's also going to be a substitute. Everything's going to be a substitute.
That's right. Because the ultimate source really is from childhood, which a person could never really attain. Yes, it's something that formed in his imagination from infancy, and everything else is really a substitute. So that's why it's really an infinite pursuit. That's why a person never attains happiness with that kind of pursuit. Okay, so
and you'd say at the same time, if he never gets involved with that, would he ever be satisfied?
Well, that's the thing. Now, but the thing is, since the instinctual is part of man's nature, so then he cannot ignore it. He has to engage in the instinctual. Okay, but apparently, if it's done within certain limits, it can be the person can gain satisfaction. He could gain satisfaction. Okay, the problem is, When he wants an increase in the problem is the increase in the satisfaction. The increased satisfaction pulls him into an area which leaves him dissatisfied. Okay, but if he limits his satisfaction, he could gain satisfaction. See, that's like the pasuk in Mishlei that let's go again. Ohev kesef lo yispa kesef. It's the same kind of thing. A person that really seeks after money will not be satisfied. Implying that if the person doesn't love money, but simply he is satisfied with small acquisition, he could be satisfied. Okay? So that's really the underlying dilemma of the instinctual life. Okay? That's why a person that is involved in Chachma really can enjoy his life. He can enjoy the Chachma, and also he could enjoy the instincts, because he's engaging the instincts to the level that they're capable of satisfying him. Okay? Yeah.
Are you going to explain how that works? Like having a...
I thought I just did.
Yeah. Moderate?
Okay. You know what? Like the moderate. The moderate.
Because I don't because know the thing logic is, that works.
No,
the, nothing works.
Right. That's the logic is that there is a satisfaction there. You can't, when a person engages in the instinctual, there is satisfaction. Okay? So the problem is, the person could gain satisfaction depending on how much energy he directs there. Okay? So a small amount of energy is capable of being satisfied. A person sits down to a meal and he's hungry, he enjoys the meal, so he's satisfied. Okay, so a small amount of energy could be satisfied. The problem is, the reason why he can't be satisfied when there's a large amount of energy, because when he directs a large amount of energy, it has to go for more than this object. Because this object is limited. Okay, it's limited. So how much energy could a person satisfy with one object? A certain amount, yes. But if there's excess energy, the object is not good. That's why it has to go beyond to the next object. Okay, so that's really the answer to that dilemma, that it's a quantitative analysis. It's a quantitative question. If it's a small amount, if most of his interest in life is elsewhere, is in terms of chachma, and there is a small amount of energy remaining for the enjoyment of the instincts, he could gain satisfaction because the objects that he's pursuing are limited, but they are satisfying. Okay, the problem is when he's trying to make these objects into the sole purpose of his satisfaction, that's an impossibility. Okay, because of the amount of energy that the person has, it's a quantitative problem. The quantity of energy cannot be satisfied, so then it has to go further into the after more objects. Okay, so that's why it's small enough. Yeah,
is it because of the question of like a total amount of energy, and if he's directing it, like you just said, he's directing it to the karma.
That's right.
Or is it that like a person might have like a lot of energy in one area. He could expend a lot of energy in chachma, but that doesn't. He still might have too much energy, let's say, in other instinctual areas.
Now you see, that's what Reuven Yonah later on mentions, that when a person, how does a person get out of pursuing the instinctual if he goes into learning? And the Rambam mentions that too, that the more a person learns, the less he's interested in the instinctual. The less a person learns, the more he runs after the instinctual. Because that's the point, that since energy is always seeking substitutes, so chachma is one substitute, the instincts are, the physical drives are a different substitute. But the energy, the person's energy, the same energy that he uses for the desires, for the physical desires, that's the same energy that's used for chachma. So that's it. So once he uses it for chachma, there's none left for the other. Okay? And that the Rambam also mentions in Chelek, that the Rambam says that in this world there is no such thing as spiritual enjoyment. Okay? The spiritual enjoyment is always the next world. This world, all of the enjoyments are gashmias, are physical enjoyments, including chachma. See, the enjoyment of chachma is derived from the instincts, which are physical. So the enjoyment that the person experiences in this world of chachma is a physical enjoyment. It's the same energy that he would use for the sexual or for any other drive he's using for chachma. Okay? That's in this world. But the only time you really have a spiritual drive, a spiritual enjoyment, that's the next world. That's why the Rambam says the enjoyment of the next world, person cannot, there's no way to imagine or estimate what the enjoyment, how great the enjoyment in the next world is, because there is nothing like it. The person doesn't have any comparison in this world, because this world is purely physical enjoyment. That's what the Rambam says. Okay? It's a purely physical enjoyment. The only thing is that it puts the person's soul in the correct, aimed in the right direction, so that once he loses the physical, he could convert to the spiritual, because the soul is looking for those objects. Okay, but insofar as his enjoyment, it's a physical enjoyment.
Would you still say there's a differentiation between like the obvious physical enjoyments that we have in this world versus the ones that you wouldn't say are such obviously physical enjoyments, such as learning?
Would I still say what?
There's a difference.
In terms of the pleasure, it's still physical pleasure.
It's just brains.
It's the emotions. The emotions. It's the emotional desire for enjoyment. That same emotional.
So, like, in what way am I removing myself from like physical pleasures to align myself to be ready for the next world? If really they're the same.
It's the pleasure is different, but the activity is the same. So
Yes. The pleasure is the same, activity is different?
What did I say?
You said the pleasure is different, the activity is the same.
Yeah, I meant the pleasure in this world is different than the pleasure in the next world, right?
Okay.
Two different enjoyments, but the activity is the same.
Okay. That's right.
All right. The activity that brings about the enjoyment is the same. That's why it's a link.
Wait, one second. The activity, learning.
He's asking me why does this world, why is this world a preparation for the next world? Yeah. Because it's the same activity. It's the pursuit of
thought. Right, I thought it was doing the same.
It's just the affect, the enjoyment that he gets is a different drug. But the pursuit is the same. Okay, so that's the thing. Okay, so that's the Rabbeinu Yonah. And then the last point I wanted to bring out was, there's a few points, but he mentions at the end of this paragraph, Beishto Amru, he mentions, it's a side point, but it's an interesting point. He mentions that, he says like this, he says, She'ein la'adam lios im ishto l'hanaso, ach kedei l'kayim ha-mitzvah, l'hafrish bein adam l'behema, k'mo sha'amar v'mesachas brachos, gabi balkeri, shelo yiyam mutsuyan eitzol l'shosem katarnagolos, katarnagolim, v'humi das apricius. Okay, whatever. But he quotes a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, which, whatever, I just thought it was an interesting point to mention, okay? And it's like this. The Gemara is on Avodah Zarah Chaf Beis, okay? It's Daf Chaf Beis, and it's just an interesting side point, but the Gemara says, Tarban v'nishmarta mikol davara. Okay, the pasuk says it's a pasuk in Devarim. Okay, oh, what did I just have? The pasuk says like this. It's Devarim.
It's Devarim.
What's that?
Chaf
Amud Beis. Yeah, it's Devarim Chaf Gimel. Perchav Gimel, Pasuk Yud. Okay. So the Pasuk says, Ki seitze machane al oivecha, when you go out against your enemy, v'nishmarta mikol davara. Okay? So you have to watch, guard yourself mikol davara. Okay? And then the next Pasuk says, Ki yeh b'cha ish asher lo yeh tahor mikre laila. If a person has an emission at night, v'yatze el mechutz l'machaneh. So he's tummy, he should go outside of the machaneh. Okay? So what's the juxtaposition? So the Gemara says, what's the juxtaposition of these two psukim? V'nishmar to mikol davara. And then, if you have a nocturnal emission, is the next pasuk. Okay, so the Gemara says like this. The Gemara says, "Tarabanam v'nishmata mikol davara." Gemara says, really an unbelievable thing. Shelo yaharher adam bayom v'yavel lidei tuma belayla. Okay, so the Gemara says that a person shouldn't be maharer bayom and bring himself to tuma belayla. Okay, so if you take a look at Rashi. Rashi says like this. He says, "Nishmata mikol davara v'samech le ki yiyah b'cha ish asher lo yiyah tahor mikra laila." And the next pasuk is as what Rashi quotes. He says, "V'kamazir le lihishomer shelo yavo lidei kach." Person should watch himself that he doesn't come to this. Okay, so I mean, I guess it's a fact that people know that the two events are connected. That Hirhor is leads to Mikra Laila, but I mean, it is an interesting idea that the Torah is pointing out. You see, and that is that the instinctual life of man goes on at night, in sleep. In other words, the instinctual life of man that he experiences during the day continues in sleep, which is something that is true and it's observable, but the statement itself, I think perhaps many people don't really recognize. You know, they feel sleep and dream life is a totally
different
type of experience that has no connection with the man's life or significance during the day. But you see clearly that the Torah, that's what the Torah is telling you, that the instinctual life of man continues in sleep, and he's responsible for that too. He's responsible for that also. Because what goes on in sleep affects him, and it makes a change in his nature. You know, so that's an interesting thing. That is part of his instinctual life. If something occurs Belila, that's because that's the way his instincts are going. It's an indicator. Okay, it's not a involuntary thing. No, it's a direct product of his actions during the day. Interesting thing. Right? Okay. So you see the Chazal, not just Chazal, the Torah, but they look at man in a definitive way, not descriptive. Night, that's sleep, that's, you know, they look at man in terms of a definitive method. Is that is part of the instinctual life? So then, insofar as the instincts is concerned, there's no difference. Okay, and you have to be careful about that too. You have to conduct yourself during the day in a way that you have to be concerned. That's part of the instinctual life of man. Okay, yeah.
So we're only concerned about what goes on when we sleep, as an indicator for how we're living our life when we're conscious.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. It's an indicator, yes, that shows where you are.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting thing. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting thing. Okay. All right.
So it's not a mikvah lot of say, that's the problem. It's an indicator of where you're at.
That's what you're saying. That's right, exactly.
That's right,
exactly.
So, what is the
Davar Ra means during the day? Be careful. be careful of your ideas, because they affect you, and it will be indicated at night. It may not express itself beyond. See, I guess that's what it's saying. In other words, a thought that you have, you may not notice an expression beyond. But if you observe carefully, you will see an expression, and it shows you that made its mark. See, I guess that's what it's saying. In other words, a person sometimes feels it's a fleeting thought. There's no effect, no imprint. You see? Oh, but you see it, Lila, something happened. That shows there was an imprint beyond.
Instinct is 24-7.
24-7. That's right. They never give up. Okay, interesting thing. But it shows you again, because that was Rabbeinu Yonah's thing, the power of the instincts, that you think you're after X, no, you're after a substitute, you know. But not only that, not only in terms of the activity that you're driving after, but even how it works in terms of effects that it has on you. You see, that only express themselves when you're sleeping. That's also, I mean, it's showing you the power and the depth of the instinctual. Okay? And it's amazing, yeah, that the Torah recognizes. The Torah has that there, right there. Okay? Yeah.
I'm not sure I go about this, but I noticed that it's the Mishnah is referring to man talking to a woman, but I'm assuming it's the same applies the opposite way, meaning the instincts don't aren't going to differentiate. I mean, women have instincts the same as men do. But is it saying that is it specific to the sexual desire, and like, you know, stronger men or not?
I mean, I guess it's using the sexual as an as the prime example of the instinctual.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, but you're saying, I mean, would it be vice versa? Would a woman have the same be have the same concern? I mean, yeah. I mean, it may be, of course, the setup with a woman might be different, but it's the same basic right. idea.
No, it's just unsatisfiable. It's just going to be looking for more things.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. I mean, women have may have greater restraints, greater internal restraint. Mm-hmm. So they may not be in the same danger as a man. A man has less restraint, so therefore he less psychological restraint in his mind, so he has to now be more careful and create a barrier. Mm-hmm. See, so that's, I guess that's why they're referencing a man, because he's really the prime example of an unrestrained instinct.
Well, the Rambam points out, this is Yadu Shasiha Manashim Al Haro Kubinyane Hamishkal.
That's right.
So you could easily argue that when a woman is talking to her husband, it's not necessarily because of that. But if a man wants to talk to his wife, then
that's right.
There's
that's
a better
right.
chance that it's because of that.
That's right. So really it has to do more about the content of the speech. That it's inyan mishkal, so it doesn't mean necessarily it has to be your wife, or it doesn't matter who's doing the talking. They're giving an example which brings out the idea that this area is the area that it demands care. Okay. Mm. Okay. Now he says like this. Okay. So the other point that I saw that was very interesting. He says a lot here, but see things like this. I guess you see the end of the Mishnah says like this. The Mishnah says, "Calls mancha adam mar basicha ima isha, goreim ra la atzma, uboto midivrei Torah, v'sofo yoresh gehenim." Okay, and the end, the final outcome, he's Yoresh Gehenna. Okay, so the thing is that Rabbeinu Yonah has an interesting thing. I mean, I'll just read through it, but the point I want to eventually get to is at the end, there is an interesting idea. That he says like this. Rabbeinu Yonah says, V'sofa Yoresh Gehenna. He says, okay, because the question is, what's at the end? What's going on at the end? I mean, he's saying that a person shouldn't expose himself to the instinctual drives, and, you know, through speech, and eventually that pulls him in, and then in the end he's Yorish Gehenna. So what is the Yorish Gehenna at the end? I mean, what does that constitute? So he says like this: Shesof Barley Day Avera. Okay. So the end of the speech, when a person exposes himself to this, eventually what will happen, what the nature of the thing it's leading to, actually to committing a sin, to committing an avera, to actually transgressing the Torah. It goes from speech to actual transgression. Okay. So he says, Achar Sher Bishrirus Libo Holech Umedaber Dvar Mima. After, with freedom of heart, he speaks with her. Al Kol Panim Yasechet. Eventually, he will be led to transgression. Vezehu Sher Omar Shlomo HaMelech Olav HaShalom Umotze Ani Mar Mimavas Esha Isha Asher Hi Mitzudim V'Charamim Libo. Okay, so I found, more bitter than death is the woman that trapped me with her heart and restrained my hands. Okay? So, right? Okay, so he's saying that what happens is eventually a person becomes trapped by the instinct. It's too powerful and he can't resist. He loses his ability to pull away. Okay? Because if he draws too close to the instinctual, it overpowers him. And there's no way for him to really get out of that. Okay? Okay. But he says like this. He says, okay. Go to the last, right towards the end. Rabbeinu Yonah says like this. Tov lifnei ha'alakim yimalit mimenu v'chote yilakeh ba. Okay. So he says, the good before God are escape the instinctual drives. Okay. And he says v'chote, but the one who ignores this warning and engages in the instinctual, so he becomes trapped by the instinct. He gets caught. Okay, so the one that exercises caution, he'll escape. But the one that does not exercise caution, okay, but tempts the instinct, he's going to get it. Okay, so listen to what Rabbeinu Yonah says. Very interesting thing. He says, "Shehatzadikim, the tzadikim, Hakadosh Baruch Hu shomrom. God watches them, guards them. Ve'enu mezamnon b'shum davar sheyuchlu lihikashel bo." And he doesn't set up for them any situation that will cause them to stumble. Okay, and he keeps them clear from situations that would cause them to stumble. Okay, but he says, "Aval hachote, the one that is the sinner, she'enu misrachek midarchei ra, who doesn't keep himself far away from the instincts, okay, and doesn't observe this cautious behavior, okay?" He says, "Ve'ein libo shalem, his heart is not complete, mizdaming lo inyan kazeh." God brings about a situation that's going to cause him to be destroyed. You know?
Very true.
So the guy that is careful and does everything, watches himself, so God protects him. But the one that doesn't watch himself, so not only does God not protect him, but God actually brings about, puts him in a situation where he's going to have to fail.
All or nothing.
What's that? It's all or nothing. It's all or nothing. In other words, you can't just, okay, you weren't careful, so, okay, you might get caught. You know, you might be in a bad situation. No. If you're not careful, then God makes sure that you are going to fail. You're not going to be just get off the hook there. Right?
Yeah. One of the examples I was thinking of, they're very similar, but the ones like practical ones like in your head. But the one is like you think to yourself like, "Oh, I'm just going to hang out with these type of people that are bad, but I'm not really going to be like them."
Right.
Right away, you're gonna be just like them. And the other one is, let's say you plan on doing something wrong. You're like, "Oh, you know what? I'm not going to do it right now. I'm going to do it like first. I have to take care of responsibility, and then I'm going to do it." Or like, let's say you're a gunner. You're like, "I'm not going to steal this time. I'm just going to steal next time." And you'll find like right now you'll steal.
Right.
If your head is in that space,
that's it.
There's nothing to protect you.
There's nothing to protect you. Right. But so that would be very good. That's very good. If you say that a person that acts this way, there's nothing to protect him, and he's not going to be able to restrain himself. He's going to fall in. You see? But Rabbeinu Yonah seems to be saying more, that not only will he not be able to protect himself, but God's going to work it out. You know, sometimes a guy could be a gunner, let's say, and he doesn't have a situation of stealing. I mean, he lives in a country that the laws are very, you know, the security is well run. I mean, you can't just walk into a bank and steal money. I mean, he lives in a society where things are regulated. And he may be to have a desire to steal. He may be a very corrupt guy, but there's really no, he never found a situation where he could steal, right? So he doesn't steal. I mean, the guy's not a mashugana. He's not going to just blatantly act in a way where he's going to get caught. He needs the right situation, find the right people, right? So God, so if that were the case, you'd say, okay, he's not a smart fellow because eventually he's going to, you know, slip up or whatever it is. But he's saying more. He's saying now, God will make sure that he will find the right situation where it's ripe for robbery, where the situation lends itself to allow him to steal. You know what I mean? And he'll do it. because how can he resist? Right? So, but God works that out for him to make sure that he finds that, that situation finds him. Okay? Why? I mean, if the man wouldn't be in that situation, he wouldn't steal. I mean, okay, he may be a Rasha, but why make it worse for him? Okay, I mean, if God wants to give him an onesh, he'll give him an onesh. But if the man didn't steal yet, and you're providing him with the situation, well, why is God do that? Yeah.
I guess it's like more to like qualify him as like a certain person, to like categorize him. And like honor, like it's kind of like, if he hasn't done the act,
right?
It's kind of perpetuating that kind of thought process, though, like that kind of wrong thought process and like that kind of wrong direction.
Okay.
So for honor, for us to like, for him actually, I guess it's more, you could even say partly for him to know to categorize him as that kind of person. He's a goddess now.
Okay.
Like for him to not, I mean, even for like tshuva, I guess, like for him to do tshuva, he has to actually understand who he is. I mean, that's what I'm thinking.
So you're saying that's really helping him, because otherwise he's fooling himself.
I mean, it might
not
be the only reason, but I think
because he would fool himself into thinking, I didn't really do anything wrong. See, nothing happened. I didn't steal. I just lived this type of life where I'm hanging out with these people, but I didn't actually do anything myself. So. He feels that he can fool himself. I'm a really righteous guy.
Yeah.
That's good.
Right.
Yeah.
I was thinking that it's kind of like an inevitable consequence of somebody who's in that mindset of, like, he's still going along. He still has this in mind that he's thinking about this sin, and he's not just being extremely cautious of himself and running away from it. And so that's going to, even if he's, like the example you gave, that he's living in a country where it's extremely strict and everything, all the rules are in place, eventually somebody who's caught up with the sin, it becomes an obsession. Eventually it becomes an obsession. And it's not to say that some mystical force is going to make it, that the guy's not looking and the door's wide open for him, but he's going to be involved in this to such a degree that he'll work it out. Eventually, it's not that he's stupid and that he's going to get caught because he's dumb at it. No, he's really going to sit there all day long and be emphasizing, how can I steal the money? And eventually, he's going to find the opportunity.
Right, I understand. But I'm just saying, you're explaining it in a natural way, which is true, definitely true. But the Rabbeinu Yonah is saying that God will intervene to provide him with the situation that would not have necessarily naturally occurred. And he says vice versa for the tzaddik. A person could be a tzaddik and be do everything right. And if he's in the wrong place at the wrong time, he could do a chait, because simply he's a human being. Okay? So he says that also. God intervenes to make sure that he doesn't have a situation like that. Okay, so he's saying the natural is true. If a person, what you're saying is true, but he's saying further, God actually provides him with this situation, you know, which is
I think what Matt was saying made a lot of sense, because I think just maybe as a riot to what he was saying, there's, I know Rebbe once explained, like by Eliyahu, that like Eliyahu told the people that they have to pick a side. I think they should seek him or something like that.
Right.
So you can't just be on the fence. Like, you got to know where you stand.
That's true.
You know, it's a similar kind of idea. I mean, I think what Matt was saying is like,
that's true.
The guy's got to know where he stands. If he goes all his life, then he never had a chance for tshuva.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's
better to be able to face the reality.
Face the reality of who you are. At least you know who you are.
Right. That's true. What Matt was saying with the.
That's right. That is true. And also, it's the idea that we have of bederach she'adam holeich molichan also. That's really the idea, that in the way that a person goes, God pushes him in that direction, wherever he goes. But it's really an idea of bechira, because the idea is that God set up the world that man is free to choose. You see? Now, part of bechira is that the person sees what the outcome of his bechira is. If a person never sees that, like you say, a person really chose evil. But because of circumstance, he was lucky. And he never actually got involved. But he wanted to do it. You see, that would lack in the whole lesson of Bechira. Because the whole lesson of Bechira is that a person has freedom and he sees what his actions, what his Bechira accomplishes. Okay, so that's the idea of Bechira, that God works it out, that if a person makes a choice in life, he doesn't escape because of luck. You know what I mean? Reality is worked out in a way that man's Bechira works. Okay? So therefore, that's the answer. God is not, he's not going to escape because of luck. If he escapes the results of his actions, it has to be due to him. And if he wants to do evil, then the world is worked out in a way that he's given the freedom to do it. You know what I mean? And part of the freedom to do it is that the situation presents itself. You see? So that's why it says God will not allow him to escape, because the laws of nature just worked out that he was lucky. He never, he wanted to kill a guy, he came with a gun, pulled the trigger, but the gun misfired. He was lucky. You see? God set up the world that when you choose, you'll have the opportunity to carry out what you want to do. Okay? And that's really part of Bechira. Okay? And conversely, if you have a person that chooses the good, so God works out the world that if a person really chooses the good and he wants the good, he won't be thwarted because of chance. You see, a person wants to learn, but chance, he never met anybody that could teach him anything. That's not the way the world is. And as God works it out, that your choice, if you make a choice, the world will conform with that choice. If you choose the good, so God works it out that it's available to you. Otherwise, the free choice is not of any advantage to a person. You see? So that's an amazing idea, really, in the Hashgacha, that the Hashgacha works in a way that man's free choice actually is effective. It's not just in potential, but he has an opportunity to actually exercise his free choice. Okay? So that's the thing. That's the thing. I want to say, right. Yeah, and that's really a very good thing. And like you mentioned, because a person, when he's part of perfection of man, is when you make a choice and you see it's wrong, I made the wrong choice. See, but if a person never has opportunity to see it's wrong, you can never learn from Bechira. Okay. Yeah.
But are you saying that's the way the world is naturally? Or are you saying Hashem is going to intervene?
That's Hashgacha. So that's the system of Hashgacha. I mean, when we say intervene, we mean there's a system of Hashgacha too. There's a system of natural law, but there's also a system of Hashgacha that works with man's free will. That when man makes a choice, there's a change in the world. You see? There's a change in the laws. There's a law of Hashgacha that supersedes the laws of nature. Okay? So that's a system too. There's a system of Hashgacha. Part of the system of Hashgacha is that man should have free will, and that the laws of nature should not interfere with his free will. Okay? That's the thing.
Do you mean to say that every guy on every level gets the most erect Hashgacha practice? I mean, not everyone agrees with that.
What do you mean?
Like the heavy Rishonim.
Well, everybody, I don't think anybody disagrees with the statement, but Derech Sha'adam Holech Molechan also.
You could easily explain that naturally without saying that every time a guy is making a choice with using his Bechira, that God has to fix, has to get involved with the natural order of things. The natural order of things presents itself.
That's part of the natural order. See, it depends what you mean by natural order. See, part of the natural order, in the natural order, there are two orders. There's the strict laws of nature, but there's also a metaphysical order, that the world is run with justice. There's a system of justice. That's also a law. You see? So therefore, that's a law that we can't really understand too well, just like we can't understand the laws of nature too well.
We don't call that God intervening every time.
That's right, we don't call that God intervening. That is a system of Hashgacha. It's not God intervening. It's not a nace. That's right. There's a system of hashgacha, you see, which means that this system works with man's bechira. But that's a system. It's not an ace. Exactly right. It is not an ace. It's not every time a man makes a choice, now there's an ace that everything, the whole world gets rearranged. No. But that's part of the order. It's part of the natural order of things. The man's a metaphysical being. He has part of him that exists, that perceives reality. And therefore, that because of his nature, he is involved in another system. Not just the system that guides the material objects, but there's a system that involves beings that live in the world of ideas, that have a part of them that's involved in the metaphysical world, in the world of ideas, comprehension of reality. Since they're a being that exists in the world of reality, in God's world of reality, so they have also a system. Okay? But you're right, it's not an ace. Not an ace. Okay? So that's the thing. Is there anything? I feel like I wanted to say something else, but is there any other things that we should talk about?
Going backwards?
What's that going backwards? Yeah, okay.
Is there any connection between the first line about the aniyim in your house and the rest of it?
Yeah. It's a good question. Is there a connection here? Because really, I mean, if you have one Maimar, one Mishnah, there should be a continuity. Like, there should be, right? You shouldn't have one Mishnah which is talks about one topic and then the other topic is no Shaychus. Right? this is a good question. What's the continuity between a Niyam, having a Niyam as your B'nai Bias? Right? And not speaking too much sexual talk. I mean, yeah.
I guess it's a matter of how open you want to be. Like, how open you are, like, you're... Because I guess allowing a niyam in your house, I mean, that, like, is... Like, you're open to all these things, you know, you're open to conversation, you're being really nice to everybody, and then it's naturally... very easy to fall into like another. I'm like, I'm gonna talk to everybody. I want to be involved with these conversations.
Right.
It's like it's some kind of like openness. And just kind of like,
okay.
Allowing yourself like maybe too much, and so it's like kind of like to stop you from like too like there's an extent that.
Right, like to have a limitation.
To develop that more, but that's
yeah.
Like, I think I'm gonna say more.
Right.
I'll be sorry.
I didn't recognize the song.
Not supposed to happen.
So it's a good question. It's a good question. In other words, well, what do we say? We said the first part with the aniyim and the what was the idea of the aniyim, of having aniyim to be your servants?
Not think you're so sophisticated and get involved. That's how people think of you as a value.
Where the person wants to have a certain feeling of importance, self-importance. Right? Chazal said self-importance is a phony thing. That's a totally phony thing. Right? Catering to that emotion of self-importance and elitism is a bad type of mental picture.
Supporting Aniyim or keep that thought going? Like, I'm so important to even other people.
No, but that's that we were going on because the Rambam says that you should have, what it's telling you is that if you have servants, right, your servants shouldn't be because of sophistication. It should be if you have a person that's an ani that could be very good a servant, and but the only thing is you don't want him because of embarrassment. He says that is a phony thing. That's a phony thing that you want to have sophisticated servants. You know, that's a phony thing, and that's just a false self-image. You know? False self-image, right. That's what we say. So the thing is, that's a false idea of the self. Right? And that's an egoistic. That's an egoistic component of man. Right? And then the first thing was that your house should be open from all four corners. right, that anybody could come in, an Ani Aniyim could come in. They could feel that they don't have to feel like you gave them something. You make them feel as if it's their house, like they didn't even, right, you didn't even, there was no sacrifice. They walk into your house. It's like an open door policy. Right? So that's also, so what was that? That was that the possessions, the person protects himself because of his possessions, his, right? His self-image is, well, these are mine, right? He, his sense of self, he differentiates himself, these are mine, this is mine, and you stay away. I don't need butlers, I don't have to be fancy, but this is my house. This is my palace. Right? So one is the ego, the egoism of the possessions. Right? This belongs to me. Right? The other is the egoism of the self. Like I'm a special person.
I'm a big deal.
I'm a big deal.
Right? People know me.
People know me, exactly. You see? That is, you can't take that lightly. That, right? See, that sometimes movies depicts a real thing in man. Right? So those, that really was the aggrandizing the self. That a person wants to feel that he's something. Right? But in a false way. Not in, because we said in a realistic way, there is a realistic way. Right? That a person has worth, there is a realistic thing, but that's in God's reality, not how you are in man's reality. How you compare with others, that's a totally false thing. You're a big deal to other men. It's a false framework, right? So now, what is this? This would seem to be a totally different thing. This is the instinctual drives. Not the egoistic. Right? The instinctual. So why is that? How does that fit in?
Maybe that's the point, that in all areas you can do things in the proper way and you can do things in an improper way. So the first thing is how you present yourself, how you present your possessions. The second thing is how... the Rama would use other people to reflect on yourself,
right?
And the third is what, where you channel your internal drive. So they're all, so the point is always the same, that you could do it in an excessive way,
right?
But
don't do it excessively.
Wealth is right. Is good, but only in a way that you're going to share it with others. Having a dependence on you can be good,
right.
But only in a way that it doesn't boost you up. Only in a way that it really helps the others. And
right.
The instincts, it could also be good, but only in a way that it leads you.
Okay. In other words, so what you're saying is that really a person sometimes thinks that this is an instinctual thing. I don't get involved in the instincts. I get more involved. You know, have self-respect. I operate in a different way, right? I don't. Instincts is, that's a low thing. But me, I'm. So it's showing you, really. I mean, that's good. In other words, it's showing you that what you see as different personality types, it's really stems from one source. It's really the instinctual drives that a person is following. And those instinctual drives could take many forms. So a person is involved in wealth or in possessions or in status, you see, it's not really a different. The source of the drive is the same. It stems from an instinctual, egoistic part of man, you see. And when a person follows the instincts, the pleasures, that's also a egoistic part of man. It's the desire for self-gratification. So really, it's telling you what looks to man as three different personalities. This guy's a higher personality. This guy's more base. It's really psychologically, it's really a desire for the self satisfaction. You see? And it could take many forms, but really, it's one is the person has to act rationally with regard to any expression. There's no one expression that's more preferable. If a person's irrational in one, it's the same irrationality. The person feels, I'm not an instinctual guy, but you know, I'd like to be a
big deal.
I'm a big deal. See, I forget these things. People know me. That's it. I get out of it, and that's it. I want to be a big deal. So a guy somehow feels like, okay, that's not, you know, that's more refined. But irrationality is irrationality. You know what I mean? And it's just three different expressions of the same egoistic drive in man, the same drive that takes him away from reality. That's there. That's good. Yeah.
But it seems like it's going off of like the positive, like you should be like this kind of person, but don't go like that far. You know? I mean, I'm just like.
Good. What do you mean?
No, I'm saying like it says Yehi betcha patuach le'ravatav Yehu inayim
right.
So it's like feeding off of like.
What are you saying? I mean, the one they're telling you the positive, and then
right, and then the other, like then it's going into like, but don't do this. And by the way, like.
That's true. You mean, so why do you have that type of? Why is it set up that way? It's a good question. Why is it set up in the positive and the negative? Okay, let's think about it. I mean, that's a good.
Why does it say Mesiach Maat Yemisha?
Well, that. What's that? Why is that?
Following the same syntax.
Right, syntax. That's right. That's good. Okay, I mean, I think what we said up to now is true, but that's an additional point. I think maybe that would shed further light. Why doesn't that, it's not a consistent flow. That's good. Let's think about it. That's a good insight. Alright, maybe think about it in... see if we can offer any suggestions next time. Yeah.
So just to clarify point that you said before, then with we're talking about giving way to your instincts, like even a little bit, it's just gonna, if you're tempting the instincts, and it's just gonna go out of control because it really has no end, and
right.
It's like a bad route to do that. So I'm not really sure how to phrase this question, but what's the differentiate? Meaning, you have to be involved in the instincts to some degree, meaning like you have to eat, you know, you have to involve the sexual. So what do we really mean by tempting the instincts?
So that's what I wanted to mention. I forgot about that. The Rabbeinu Yonah says precious. He mentions the term precious. And then he gives you an example that the precious is that a person relates to his wife because of Puruvu. You see? So that's really the guiding light. The precious means where the instinct is aligned with the irrational thought. Mm-hmm. In other words, if you can align the instinct with the rational thought, then you have a parameter. Like let's say, for instance, a person eats. Well, why am I eating? I have to sustain myself. So now he knows he has a parameter. Now if the guy's sitting down and he goes beyond, or he just eats indiscriminately, and he notices he's gaining weight, and he knows it's not precious. Because that activity is not in line with a rational idea. He's harming his health. You know what I mean? So he should try as much as possible to line up the desire with a rational motive, an objective motive. Insofar as he could do that, he's better off. You know what I mean? So sometimes a guy may say, well, I need an outlet. You know what I mean? Okay, but he has to know, you see, is this a rational motive or not? And if it's not a rational motive, well, maybe I need a little leeway. I can't. But then he knows that this is leeway. You see, even though I know I don't need this, but I feel nervous. I got to eat a little more. I have to eat extra and just indulge a little, and then I'll be able to engage in learning. But then he knows he's doing it. And knows that's also a level that he knows this is the parameter. Then he knows when he's going beyond it. Right. But the precious is precious. Apparently, the definition of precious apparently is where the satisfaction of the instinct is tied to some rational goal. You see, but if the satisfaction of the instinct is not tied to a goal, it's for the sake of the satisfaction itself, that's not precious.
It's uncontrollable.
That's right. It's, why do I want to do this? For the pleasure. You see, that's not precious. If I say, well, why do I want to do this? Well, yes, I need the pleasure, but it is serves a rational purpose. It serves a purpose. You see, then that's precious. That apparently is the definition of precious. Doesn't mean purish. Doesn't mean a guy that doesn't engage in instincts. that's ascetic. That's a sick person. So purish means the instinct is lined up with something rational. Okay, I wanted to mention that because that's a nice thing that he mentions purish and then he gives an example. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.